fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.co.
Have you ever wanted to be a host on an ACA show or be the one calling the shots behind the scenes? Are you in Austin, Texas, or at least Austin adjacent? Well, on Saturday, February 25th, make your way down to the Free Thought Library because we'll be holding open auditions for show hosts and orientations for prospective crew members. For those wanting to be hosts, you'll be able to sit in the studio where our shows are broadcast and we'll put you through your paces to see if you can be one of the new personalities of the ACA. For future crew members, you'll get hands-on experience using the equipment used for broadcast and will help us record the host auditions. If you've ever dreamed of being part of the ACA productions, then this is your chance to show us what you've got. This event is free. For more information and registration, visit tiny.cc/ACA auditions.
So you
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to The Atheist Experience. Today is February 19th, 2023. I'm your host. My name is Kenneth, and joining me today is J. Mike.
Hello.
I am so pumped. We're going to have a high-energy show. The Atheist Experience is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. All good things. A couple of things really quick before we dive in. One, if you are lurking in the comments, if you're that person dropping in the Bible verse, if you're talking about what you believe, don't lurk. Don't troll. Call. You can call. We have a phone number. We even have ways that you can just key in from your computer and call. It's free. So don't do the lurky trolley thing, but let's talk. Also, before we get started, we wanted to introduce a new segment we're trying on the show called Share Your Experience. Each week, we will be asking you, the audience, a question that you can respond to in the comment section of the video. Next week, we'll pick our favorite three responses and show them. And we'll talk about them at the beginning of next week's episode. All right. And we'll give you a new question then. Today, this week's question is, what is the most shocking verse of the Bible? When you leave your comment on the video with a hashtag SYE, and your comment may be read on next week's episode. But let me ask you, Jamie, what do you think the most shocking Bible verse is?
It's really hard to narrow down to one. So I'll give you two that I have. I'll go through them briefly. So I'll just start with the verse, I guess. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be familiar with this. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord. If you give the Ammonites into my hand, whatever comes out of the door of my house to meet me when I return in triumph from the Ammonites will be the Lord's. And I will sacrifice it as a burnt offering. When Jephthah returned to his home in Mizpah, who should come out to meet him but his daughter, dancing to the sound of trembles. After 2 months, she returned to her father, And he did to her as he had vowed. Judges 11:30 through 19. I believe that's the NIV. And after burning his daughter, Jephthah, that's a really hard word to say, by the way, Jephthah, I feel like I'm going to mess it up every time, was rewarded with a prestigious judgeship and was later buried with honor. That was, to me, extremely appalling to have first had read. But I think the one that sticks out the most is something everybody's familiar with in Psalms 137, 8 to 9. O daughter Babylon, you devastator, happy shall be the who pay you back what you have done to us. Happy shall they be who take your little ones and dash them against the rocks. So I think Everybody's probably familiar with both of those. I don't know that I have to elucidate far onto that, but that was shocking. That was shocking. Yeah, first time I had read that. I think when I was like 14 or 15, seriously considering these things, wondering if I'd see, you know, one of my friends who passed away really early again, and this is what I'm digesting as a child. So
People always talk about how God intervened with Isaac in the Bible, how like Abraham was gonna kill his kid, but he didn't, because God stepped in and it didn't happen, thus showing that, you know, parents being willing to sacrifice their children is not a good thing. But they always forget about Jephthah's daughter.
Yeah.
You know? On my end, I was talking to somebody the other day about this idea found in Christianity, that not all of Christianity, before people start yelling at me, some Christians think that one of the pleasures in heaven is going to be being able to observe the torment of the souls of the damned. Aquinas talked about this. Augustine talked about this. Tertullian talked about this. The famous American revivalist Jonathan Edwards talked about this. And you can find in Revelation chapters 14, 18, and 19, this idea that like the smoke coming off of the people being tormented, fire and brimstone, will ascend up, and that the saints will be super psyched about this. And I personally find rejoicing over the suffering of other people to be shocking. So that would be my entry. Yeah. Anyway, tune in next week to hear the top three answers. I'm looking forward to it. You ready for a call, Mike?
I am. And I don't think there's a shortage. I think we'll get a variation of them.
Yeah, actually, it's filling up a lot. So if you're on the fence about calling in, get in now, because it's going to be a miracle if we can get to all these calls. First, let's talk to Mr. Warlights.
Hey.
Hi there.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
It says that you would like to talk about how you can prove the existence of the spiritual God form of Jesus Christ.
Yes, that is true. Yes.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, yeah, I can make Jesus Christ appear on the show for the very first time. Everyone will see him on the show.
Go for it.
Okay, so I need everyone to like join me in prayer, and you have to repeat after me.
I'm not gonna do this. If you've got something, cut to the chase, because I'm not gonna let you just burn time while there are people who are waiting to come on the show.
Oh no, that's the thing. Those are the magic words. You got to repeat after me, and then after you finish, then Jesus Christ will appear on the show.
Okay. All right. Have a good one. Let's talk to Clark in California. It says objective morality points to a God. Clark, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Doing good.
Better now.
That's good to hear. It's good to hear. Yeah. So my argument is going to be somewhat of a transcendental argument for the existence of God, namely with regards to the moral propositions being certain necessary conditions for our mind's ability to experience, and those can only embed themselves in such a way if there's a divine being, namely God. And so the question I'd like to ask you is, either of you, is do you think that moral statements are propositional?
I'm not a non-cognitivist, but I don't know what I have to do with your argument.
Yeah, what is our opinion? I mean, we're just a couple of idiots on the internet, man. Well, I mean, bust out the argument.
Well, because I wanted to just clarify that, to just, you know, show that if you, which whoever said that you're a non-cognitivist, if you accept that moral statements are propositional, but you're going to say that maybe they're all false, which I'm not saying you have said, but if you say that they're true or they're all false, that's going to be very important to the argument. So that's why I just wanted to clarify those two questions. So if they're
sure, let me ask you a clarifying. Well, let me ask you a clarifying thing, because this kind of gets strange when we just use the word moral fact. If you're referring to like a stance independent moral fact, right, independent of my stances or attitudes or desires, something like that, I don't even know if that's propositional. If you're talking, because I don't know what a stance independent reason is. I know what reasons are tethered to my mind, what desires and stances I have. That's the notion of reason talk that makes sense to me when I'm saying what I should do and what I should not do. When you divorce it from that, or when you tether moral facts, and they're no longer tethered to my mind. And I guess in this case, it'd be tethered to God's mind, which would be subjective, but we'll shelve that. Then I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know if the proposition is, if it's even propositional. It could just be gibberish, because I don't even know what an analysis of a stance-independent reason is. That's what objective morality would be. So it's going to be hard for me to accept a transcendental argument.
So based off what you said, the argument I'm gonna give is something like a companions and guilt argument. So I'm going to take your skepticism towards stance-independent reasons and say
no, that's fine. I grant that. Companions, that's fine. I grant that. I grant companions and guilt. I grant it. It's fine.
Okay.
Like I don't have a problem.
Okay,
like,
so there are no stance independent epistemic reasons for belief.
No, you have to buy into the goal, right? There aren't floating independent reasons that you ought to care about cosmology or something. That
Clark,
doesn't make any sense.
What is your argument, Clark?
Well, that's the argument. So if there are no stance independent reasons for belief, then there's no stance independent reason or categorical reason to believe any.
You have to substantiate that there are categorical reasons.
Case, then there's no justification.
No,
yeah,
that's
no
not.
Justification
no,
for
that's,
your beliefs,
that's
and
not,
therefore
no,
you have
no. No, 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 no. Look, there's no stance independent justification or no stance independent reasons that like I should care about a good epistemology or that I should care about looking at the stars and wondering about like astrophysics or whatever. You have to buy into those goals. They're conditional, right? They're a hypothetical. It's a hypothetical imperative. So I don't see like what. That's why I find the companions and guilt thing like really cringy.
Well, yeah, the thing is, I'm pointing out that the issue with what you're saying is that if there are no categorical reasons for belief or reasons for action, then there's going to be no justification for you to have any knowledge. If reasons are dispositional on your account, then how can you give an account for intentional states, which is agency, because we can assess different standards and see if we're in or out of accord with them. And in virtue of that accordance relation, our mental states would therefore be normative. And if our mental
I used to hold that view too. Okay. Look, like I got you, Clark. I used to be a property dualist. I don't think that you actually have to, and let's for the sake of everybody here, because we're getting a lot into the philosophy and you have to like really be into this stuff for this to like, for everybody to kind of understand what's going on. And so if you can just present your argument, that would be great. But all that stuff, that's just begging the question against my view. If I'm a type identity theorist, or if I just think that I'm a limitativist, there is no normativity or any of that stuff. I mean, this isn't going to be compelling of an argument. You could be like, oh, you don't have these things, or you don't have normativity. Doesn't trouble me. This is debates I get with people that are property dualists, or we discuss whether or not, you know, I should, but it's just gonna be question begging. If I just deny that there's normativity or something like that, or you use rule following arguments or whatever, it's fine. Like this isn't gonna be problematic on my view. It's just gonna beg the question. So rather than doing this whole dance where I'm not gonna accept that, just why don't you present your argument? I mean, it's already on a shaky ground because I don't accept categorical moral facts. So I don't know how I'm supposed to accept the conclusion of your argument when I already deny one of the premises, but.
Yeah, so I haven't given the argument yet, and I'll get to it in 1 second. The issue, just real quick to clarify, is that when you say there are no categorical reasons for belief or reasons for action, then you're going to have to be committed to saying that mental states are not normative as well. And if mental states are not normative, then you're going to rule out the accordance relation that is there with regards to whether or not our mental states are in or out of accord with the truth conditions of any true proposition.
I get that. Look,
that's necessary. So if you affirm that second order proposition that's necessary, then you need to show the inference there, which is a deductive inference, and you'd have to give the argument at that point.
No, I don't have to give. Look, no.
None of this.
That's not how an argument works, by the way.
Right, and I've muted Clark. Clark, this is going to be your last opportunity. I like because people do this. They'll call in, and instead of making their case and sharing what they believe and why, they'll try to do this sort of judo move where they flip it and try to make it so that now all of a sudden Mike has to justify his epistemology. Make your argument so that we can talk about it. That's what we're gonna do. Go for it.
Yeah. So my argument is that. If there are necessarily existing thoughts, then there must be a necessarily existing mind. Epistemic propositions are necessarily existing thoughts, therefore there's a necessarily existing mind, namely God.
What does that have to do with objective morality?
Well, because the moral propositions are going to be no different from the epistemic ones in terms of their nature. So if that argument is true, then it would just follow. It would entail that objective morality.
I've had this conversation with somebody too on this. It's like, no, because I mean, for one thing, someone can take propositions, by the way, they can use this art. They can take your argument and just say propositions actually don't reduce to mental events at all. So moral propositions, they're going to be an abstract object. It's not going to be something that reduces to minds. Why? Because there's an infinite regression. Why? Because say God believes, 1 + 1 = 2. Well, if his belief in the proposition one plus one equals two is just his thought, you get an infinite regression. The object of his thought is itself a thought, which the object of that thought is itself a thought. And you get this infinite regression. So it's, you're acting as if like there's no defeaters for this view when there are plenty of people in philosophy who take propositions to be abstract objects, not in the mind of anybody. So that's why you should just give your, argument. Like, you're just begging
like,
But do you agree with me that there are people that take that view? You sound like you're familiar with the literature on this. So do you agree with me that that is a view that people take?
Yeah.
Great. So I don't know why you're coming in thinking that you got this smoking gun argument when there's clearly, you know what? I'm going to drop you if you don't just let me finish. I don't understand why you'd come in here hot thinking you have this really awesome argument, transcendental argument, when people reject this. They reject transcendental categories. They can reject. They could just say, look, I don't even think that we can get knowledge. I think the problem of the criterion is a problem. They could say all these things. You're not going to force them into submission by just telling them that they ought to think that these things exist, right? You're going to have to give additional supporting arguments to show why we should care about that. And I would rather just do some type of worldview comparison at that point and just see which view is making way more commitments, which view is way more complicated, taking way more axioms and more ontological commitments than mine. And it's, if it's not explaining the data, but my view is simpler and explains the data, then I'm just going to go with that, right? I'm not going to have to appeal to the mind of God or appeal to propositions as abstract objects. I mean, maybe someone could give me a reason, but that would be your job, right? Not my job.
By that, the academic consensus.
Oh, you were talking the whole time. All right, Yeah. So I dropped Clark because he just talked the whole time, didn't even want to listen. So that's fine. You can't come into here and apologize for everybody for getting into the philosophy weeds, but like coming in here and just assuming that someone should accept transcendental categories, that they couldn't make an argument that they actually are just abstract objects, or that maybe they're an eliminativist and that all of this is just in our heads. There isn't normativity. There isn't any of this stuff like Dan Dennett's view, in a sense. It's not good enough to just beg the question against the view. You have to show like why those people would be wrong, or just present your argument. I don't really get how that's supposed to affect me when I already don't accept those propositions, right?
Yep.
But anyway.
Yep. Well, I'm glad you could. I know that kind of call is, you know, is a juicy one to you. I know that you really enjoyed getting into that kind of thing. Unfortunately, that was a frustrating
experience. Well, it's this like mirage that this is the only way to account for it. And in reality, there are many other views that account for it. That's the dispute. That's why nobody can agree in philosophy. That's why there's no expert consensus in philosophy, because everybody disagrees that there's three philosophers in the room.
Hey, if you like what we do and would like to support us, here are some of the ways to support the Atheist Experience and the ACA. That's the smoothest transition you're going to hear ever. Become a member for as little as 99 cents a month. Click the join button below the video. This will give you access to special chat emojis. I saw one this morning, or this afternoon rather, of my goofy face. You can send a super chat with a question or comment, which will be read live on air during the show. Recognize the Atheist Experience is just one of the shows put on by the ACA. Be sure to check out our other shows as well. Shows like Secular Sexuality on Thursdays starting at 7 o'clock Central. Truth Wanted is on Fridays at 7. And then we have our Sunday shows. Talk Heathen is at 1 o'clock Central. The Nonprofits is on right before this show at 3 p.m. Central. Finally, you can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/PatreonAXP. And with that out of the way, there's a call that has my mouth watering over here, which is Kevin in Georgia, who says Judeo-Christian values are shown to produce the healthiest society. Kevin.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Not much. What is a Judeo-Christian value?
Well, to be absolutely honest with you, I kind of said a word that is used, I would say loosely on a normal basis, to kind of spark the attention. What I'm really going for is the traditional Christian values that we know and believe of in America. I would say the everyday Christian, the Christians of the past couple of hundred years is what I was going for. So I do want to clarify that.
Okay. What's a Christian value?
So the reason I called is, for example, when we're talking about things like marriage, we're talking about things like honor your mother, honor your father, lie, cheating, stealing, all these different things is to typical commandments. And the biggest reason I called is because I'm hearing just on a normal basis, I'll be the first one to say Christianity, in my opinion, is not perfect. There's a lot of things that I probably do not agree with, although there are a lot of things that I do agree with. And I'm trying to figure out, why would we be in so much of a rush to go away from those principles when these are the very same principles principles that got us to this free, beautiful country we live in right now. Like I said, you know, we could nitpick and point out all the negative things about America, but at the same time, we're being able to talk here on a Sunday to share our opinions, whether we agree or not. And I feel like those very values are thought of in the back of people's heads that built this country. So I just wanted your opinion on that.
So in what you're asking, there's this sort of idea that America has ever been like a Christian nation. And I'm wondering if you intend for that to be there in the question.
Sure. I mean, ultimately, I just want to know, it seems like we're running away from those principles and that value. Not them exact. Of course, all of us would agree it's bad to kill somebody. But at the same time, I feel like all together in abundance, I feel like Christianity has a lot of standards and rules that it would hold someone to that I think would suffice anywhere around the world if followed. And well, I don't know any
so
other.
Let me give you two things to chew on. One, I'm going to talk about two things. I'm going to talk about us being here on a Sunday talking about our ideas and killing people. So first, okay, when we think about rules in Christianity, and there's only one set of rules that was so important to God that he wrote them down himself in stone. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. Commandments.
I'm talking about the Ten Commandments, right? And at the beginning of the Ten Commandments, there's the first three commandments are all about man's relationship to God, right? And at the very, very tippy top, the commandment is you do not have any other gods, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Meanwhile, if we look at the laws of, you know, the United States, since that's where we're talking about, what would the First Amendment say about this idea that you can only have one God?
Could you elaborate on that a little further? Like, I know where you're going, but I kind of just want you to jump me in there.
So the very First Amendment to the Constitution is this idea that Congress makes no law respecting any establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, right? You can have any God you want to. You can have six different gods if you want to in the United States. It's totally cool. And notice how that is the exact opposite of a biblical value.
Sure.
The Bible, the Ten Commandments, hey, you do not have any other gods, full stop, period. And the penalties for breaking those commandments was death. Meanwhile, the United States, from the get-go, it's like, no, we're not doing that here. We know what the Bible says. We're not doing that here.
Gotcha.
Right? Also, you brought up killing people, right? The idea that we can all agree that killing people is wrong. And the first thing that came to mind in my mind was that I disagree. It may or may not be wrong. And like, are the laws here in the United States recognize that? There's different degrees even of murder. There's manslaughter, you know? There's if someone is attacking you and you have to make the horrible, unfortunate decision to defend yourself and that person ends up, you know, being unalived, you're not considered
used to that TikTok lifestyle.
Yeah, it's not considered to be not only is it not legally, you know, actionable, we don't even think of that as being morally bad. It's, you know, you were defending yourself. You did what you had to do, right? So there's this idea that has infected our sort of national conversation that America has ever been a Christian nation. And it is a myth. You can look at our laws. You can look at, it's just not a thing, fortunately.
So quick response. So I follow that. If you were to try to, you know, if you took two pictures and you laid them on top of each other, no, you know, we're not going lockstep and key with what God asks in the Bible. Of course not.
Right.
So I see where you're going with that. I agree with you there. I just feel like ultimately, I guess when it doesn't affect our the social constructs we've created and we've all agreed upon, I still think we're still walking down that line. I mean, I don't really see the need for when two people are married, why it's even a crime when you are to cheat on your spouse. I don't cheat on my spouse. I'm not saying I agree. But I don't feel like the United States benefits from penalizing you for that in any possible way. At the same time, I feel like that's something in the back of our mind as a nation that, well, you're supposed to have one wife and you're supposed to be monogamous to that wife. And the main reason I called, I wanted to respond to what you said, that I understand there's not going to be this direct correlation and everything would be 100% correct. I just feel like altogether, there's a new wave of how things should be done are being brought about. And I'm just curious, if these ways are not tested, if they didn't get us here, why throw away what was done before so fast? That just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, if you had a new equation that hasn't built anything, meanwhile, I have one that is tried and tested over hundreds of years. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm just saying I don't find it very credible to so vastly say, you know what, this is the way things should be done, although the other one has went through centuries. I don't follow
and-
that. That's where I'm coming from.
And this has been, you're not alone. People have been saying something like this forever. Why the hell should women have the right to vote? Look at how far this country has gone without that. Why should we give civil rights to these people? Look at how far we've come. Why the hell would we free our slaves? Look at this nation we've built. You know, that's the argument. Do you see the problem?
Now, yeah, I definitely see the problem. The only thing that I would say is I have an opinion, so do you, but I don't think it's the opinion necessarily that matters. Kind of like in, what is it, the other country where they're trying to take women's ability from being able to pretty much educate themselves. I don't disagree with that. I don't agree with that. You know, I have a wife, I have cousins, I have sisters. That doesn't make sense to me at all. At the same time, if they're going for a particular goal and that goal is going to be met by whatever they think is the reason for doing that, then maybe they're correct in their own way is what I'm getting at. And if they're going to build up a nation of people and they're going for a particular goal, I can't call them wrong, but I can disagree. But that doesn't make them wrong.
it might, depending on what their goal is. But notice that what you're talking about with respect to, you know, what we're doing as a nation, what other nations are doing, the entire conversation revolves around the outcomes. It's what are we trying to do? What are the effects of our actions? And this has nothing to do with any particular religious outlook, right? This whole thing started with a discussion about, it was supposed to be about Christian value, right? I still don't even know what a Christian value is. Like, what would be a value that's unique to Christianity? But notice that when you're talking about this, when the discussion is, what should we do? It's all about what is the outcome that we're trying to achieve, not what would make Jesus happy.
Okay. So, and just because, you know, you guys are giving me a lot of time already, but when you said we're getting away from the Christian value aspect of it, if you want me to just veer back to that really quickly,
we'll definitely end on this point because we have so many other callers, but can you give me an example of anything that is a value that is unique to Christianity?
I mean, if I didn't create Ten Commandments, I don't get to say that those things are right or wrong if they were created by the person that says they're right or wrong. So I'm going to.
But that's not answering the question, though. I'm just asking, is there any value? Because the idea that you shouldn't have any other gods, you shouldn't, you know, perjure yourself or covet, you know, that you should obey your parents, none of these things are unique to Christianity. I'm wondering, is there anything that you can point out that is a value that is unique to Christianity that we should value?
I would say, off the top of my head, no. I mean, other than the commandments themselves, I think that's it in a nutshell. Because, you know, Islam doesn't have the same exact instruction, you know, but there are things that are the same, but they're different. So I would call that a Christian value. But if you want to call it just a commandment, I would stop right there and I would agree with
it. Well, it's certainly something to think about. Kevin, I appreciate the call. Mike, do you want to take the last word here?
No, that was
all right.
That was
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Kevin, have a good rest of your day. All right. A couple more announcements. Hey, listen, if you shop on Amazon, and look, you probably do. I do. We're hooked, right? But if you do, then you can support the ACA at no cost to you. Visit tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA and do it soon because the program ends tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Go buy your stuff today, people. Thank you to everyone who selected the ACA as their designated charity. With your help, we've been able to raise more than $10,000. That's huge for a charity. With the Amazon Smile ending, we could sure use some extra support. So come find us on Patreon, tiny.cc/PatreonAXP. We have a channel now that houses all of the shows of the ACA in audio podcast form. Please visit tiny.cc/AEN podcasts. From there, you can listen to all of the latest shows from The Atheist Experience, Talk Heathen, Truth Wanted, Secular Sexuality, The Nonprofits. It's all on the one channel. We couldn't possibly make it easier for you. We also have three Facebook groups that are run by fans, for fans that you can interact with. The first is the Atheist Experience fan group at tiny.cc/FBAXP. There is also the Atheist Experience private fan group where you can interact with others without having those interactions appear on your public feed. Find that at tiny.cc/FBAXPPR. We also have a newer group, the Atheist Experience fan group, Atheist versus Theist Debates, where you can try out some of your arguments on theists and atheists alike. You can find that at tiny.cc/AXP fan debates. And with that, let's talk to someone's calling me out. Oh my God. All right. Let's see what's
let's
going on
it.
Here.
Calling you out.
All right. Emmanuel in Texas says, I want to address Kenneth's argument about free will. What the hell did I say?
Wait, you believe in libertarian free will, Kenneth?
Hi, Kenneth.
Hello.
I'm super nervous right now, but...
Hey, no worries. We're all nervous before the show starts, so yeah. You're not alone.
Yeah. I was watching one of your videos, and you're asking basic questions about, you know, the God of the Bible and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you're asking if God already knew that we will fall into sin.
Yeah.
And he created us either way and uh-huh. give us like a choice. Isn't he evil? You're saying.
Yeah.
So I just want to counter that argument.
Yeah. And just to make sure everyone knows like what I was saying, because I've said this to a lot of people. I bring up passages, you know, I like bringing up Ephesians 1 and Ephesians 2 to talk about how there's this idea that
Ephesians right now, what a coincidence.
There you go. So there's this idea that, you know, God is sovereign, that God knows everything that's ever going to happen ever, and that God is predestined who he would and wouldn't save, just for his own reasons, for his own glory. And yeah, so the question that I you know, encourage people to think about is, if God creates people that he knows are not going to be saved, why do that if they're just going to be, you know, destroyed ultimately?
Oh, yeah. So I do believe that God created a certain people to be saved, and God created a certain people to be damned in hell after he created them. I do believe that concept because,
yikes.
You know, I'm sorry?
Nothing. Keep going.
So... what I believe is, you know, God gave us, you know, the Old Testament, even though he knew that we wouldn't keep the commandment and our flesh is really weak to keep the commandment. I think that's why God sent Christ, because, you know, the law was like a guardian to us so that we may grow to grace in Christ. So I do believe a certain people will never believe in God because God has hardened their heart. That's why we don't have free will.
Yeah. So, if God hardens someone's heart and then throws them in hell, wouldn't that be just like a horrible, evil thing to do?
What I mean by, I get what you're saying.
Who's causally responsible?
Yeah.
I don't think we could say that, because if he created all things.
Yeah, who's causally responsible?
Like a creator.
So I chose the words.
I don't think we could hold him accountable, or I don't think we could say that he's responsible.
If A causes B and B causes C, did A cause C? I mean, there's some type of transitive notion there, right? Like A ends up causing C, right?
Let's think about this for a second, because we're living in, you know, technologically advanced times, relatively speaking, to every other time. If I was capable of creating, say, a robot, right? Let's pretend that I'm, you know, a brilliant robotics engineer, and I create a robot that is capable of feeling pain. I give it a neural network. It can suffer. It can prefer to have certain experiences, not want to have other experiences, and I can force it to have experiences that it doesn't want to have. If I did that, if I created a mind essentially that could suffer, and then I put in a position where it had to suffer and had no choice in the matter, would that be wrong for me to do?
Yeah, that would be wrong, but I don't want to say, you know, God is evil and all of that, because I think it's kind of a blasphemous thing, you know, to
say.
Was
it a true thing though? Let's put the blasphemy thing on the table. Just focus on what's true. Let's forget about blasphemy for a second. Let's just think about what's true, okay? If me creating something for that thing to suffer, ultimately, if that would be wrong for me to do, would it also be wrong for someone else to do?
That would be wrong. I would agree.
Yeah. So what's the deal with the biblical God doing that?
Yeah, like imagine we start with Kenneth and we get to 8 billion people and you're like exhausted by the end of it. You're like, okay, I agree. All 8 billion of those cases would have been wrong. Why are we going to special plead for this case when we get to God?
Yeah, but what I think is, we are all sinners and we are all worthy of death. But if God chose a certain people and he actually predetermined their salvation, I think he's a really good God. Because now you have a scenario where you could only focus on the positive side instead of the negative side. Because God gave a certain people a certain mercy. I'm sorry.
I'm going to go back to the thought experiment. So let's say that I've created certain robots just to torture them. But I also am a cool dude and I volunteer my time to, knit sweaters for kids who are cold. Would that make the torture thing not worth paying attention to anymore.
But what if they're your enemy and they hate you and they do horrible things to you? They don't obey your rules. You have a scenario here when everyone breaks God's law and everyone hates God and everyone is like wicked and evil. And we are
I think I've identified the you have read a book and accepted a certain set of claims as true. Things like saying that we all deserve death or that people are evil. These are things that are found in a book, but my goodness, is there any reason to think this stuff is true?
Yeah, that's where I wanted to get into, because a book says a thing. Why should me and Kenneth believe it?
What I think is you have to look into the proof of that book. So the Bible in general is not
produce the pudding. Here's the proof.
So what I think is the biggest proof that we have for Scripture is the resurrection of Jesus. So if Jesus rose from the dead, as the book says, I think the book could be correct.
That's what Paul says, right? Paul says if the resurrection didn't happen, the whole house of cards comes falling down. It's the most important claim in the Bible. You're speaking our language, man. You're talking about evidence. So what's the evidence for the resurrection?
I think we have like four proofs that are like compelling for anyone to be a Christian.
Okay.
So
what's one?
Like my first one, the most compelling one for me might be different for you, might be different for someone else. So,
wait a minute. I thought we were going to talk about evidence for the resurrection.
No, I said there are proofs that prove that Jesus actually rose from the dead. So
okay. Yeah. What are
one of the proof that? Okay, I'm sorry.
You're good. Hello? What? Yeah. I'm just asking you to cut to the chase. What is the evidence for the resurrection?
So what I would take as a proof is like the apostles martyrdom. So if the apostles actually died for this belief and they proclaimed it, knowing that it wouldn't benefit them in any way, I think we could say that Jesus actually rose from the dead.
That doesn't follow.
Well, let me just ask you this. Is it possible for somebody to be willing to lay their life down for an idea that is not true?
That is possible. A lot of people have done that.
Great. Yeah. So then you admit that what you said doesn't logically follow.
So we'll just table that one. What's the next one?
So the other will be after someone believes in Jesus Christ, the effect that
I'm sorry to be rude. I want you to go right to that, but I just want to give you an example to chew on. Think of homeopathic remedies and people who are convinced that they're not going to get cancer or that they're going to cure cancer or whatever it's going to be that they have, and then they end up dying. They truly, truly believed it. So you have to think of that these examples exist in everyday life. People die for beliefs that they think are true. But anyway, I just want to throw meat on the bone there, because I want you to fully, that's the first one you lead with. I want to give you an example to show why that it doesn't follow.
Yeah. But you were talking about the belief's power to change somebody's life. That's the second one?
No. It's like when you believe in the scripture, God will give you a Holy Spirit and you can speak in different tongues. So
really?
Speaking in tongues is like the biggest evidence in the New Testament, right?
Have you ever gone on Google? Because there are people who today in like Pentecostal churches who will say that they're speaking in tongues and that it's the Holy Spirit doing something. Have you ever just got on Google and looked at what people who are experts in languages and linguistics have to say when they look at like recordings of people doing the tongue speaking stuff in churches?
Yeah. But Paul said there are angel languages. So all languages that are given by the Holy Spirit is not like a human language. So,
Emmanuel, you're 2,000 years removed from Paul. Why are you taking so much stock into what Paul says?
It's because, you know, I deep down believe that Paul is like a true apostle of Christ. So
okay, but look, if someone that you love comes up to you and says they saw the risen Elvis or the risen Tupac and it's transformed their life, I mean, do you believe that person? They just come up to you and tell you a claim. You said you don't?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you don't trust somebody telling, hold on. Okay.
You're so close.
So let's get there, right? Because if you don't trust your spouse or someone that you love about this revelation they've had from the risen Tupac or the risen Elvis or whatever, and you don't accept their testimony, but you accept Paul, whom you're 2,000 years removed from, right? You're 2,000 years removed, then presumably you have some really good evidence. So I'm not seeing how anything you've offered so far is even getting close to evidence. It sounds like you're just saying more book says a thing stuff.
Yeah, not only that, as I've told you, I told you there are some proofs might be compelling to me. It might not be compelling to you. So it's kind of like subjective. I don't think proof is like something that is objective all the time. So,
well, let me address that real quick.
Like, because I get the reason that some of the things that I see might not convince you, but I do believe that taking the words of Paul is like it's like the most Christian thing to do, because like,
yeah, but you have to imagine that we're the people, we're like your wife, right? We're the people who are coming up to, like, we're you in this situation, or in the situation where your spouse or someone says, "I saw the risen Tupac," right? You're going, "I don't accept that." That's us in this situation, right? You're coming to us about Paul and Jesus, and we're for the same reasons that you would deny your spouse who tells you this, me and Kenneth aren't accepting that, because there isn't really any evidence that's being produced. You just keep talking about Paul and what he said. That's just the claim. That's not the evidence.
I've got to tell you, I'm going to end it here, Emmanuel, because we got so many other callers and I want to be respectful of their time. This idea about like what is compelling drives me nuts. Because it has nothing to do with whether something is evidence or not, whether or not a claim should be believed or not. Yes, people have all different evidentiary standards, but if you are willing to accept something that is obviously not evidence and it's compelling to you, that is your problem. As a believer, look to what your Bible has to say about truth and about the value that should be placed on truth and how we should be thinking on whatever is true. Look at Philippians 4, okay? Have high evidentiary standards. And ask yourself, if the book cannot like survive you having high evidentiary standards, if your faith can't survive an honest critique, should you have it? All right. Look, I'm not gonna write. Okay. Anyway,
or if it argues and spurns against that in Proverbs 3, and lean not on your own understanding.
But and I was thinking about that, man.
So you know, because it's weird when it tells you the snake oil tactic up front, like, hey, you know, it's not you. Everyone's gonna think you're crazy, right? But trust me, you have found the truth. You see, your eyes are woke. You will know everything more than all the sheep. That's all Proverbs 3 is doing. So if you like, I guess my concern is, even if you do have a critical analysis, there's always this chance you get to Proverbs 3 and then the faith card, the faith safety net gets to come back out and gets to, you know, catch you before you hit the ground.
Proverbs 3, Hebrews 11. I mean, there are passages in the Bible, and this applies to a lot of religious texts, that function as like defensive mechanisms. Okay.
Yep.
If you will accept, I'm going to lean on my own understanding. My faith is evidence. Of course, the tongue thing isn't going to be a language that we can understand. We're not going to be, there's no way for us to test it. It's a magical angel language. You are insulating yourself from being able to find out what's actually, and that is a problem. But it's how the religion survives, is by having those defensive mechanisms.
Yeah, me and Kenneth would give you the ultimate knowledge to atheism, but we have to speak in our tongues, and you know, we only do that, like, that revelation's for us, and some people don't understand.
You have to hang out with us, and we hold hands.
You can't understand naturalism until you do, like, you gotta play stuff with your tongue.
Iron Maiden song backwards, it's a whole ordeal. Look, exactly. The ACA hosts several shows other than The Atheist Experience, including The Nonprofits, Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, and Talk Heathen. If you didn't catch all of the shows last week, here's a taste of the things you probably want to go back and watch.
The Fet Lives, where you found me, you know, just doing my thing, in the Pet Palace.
I like the idea that the audience thinks that I just like sort of troll Fet Life, just trying to find somebody to come and talk to me about something sexy and funny and weird. Yeah.
He knows things through a feeling, and you know through from a feeling, and it seems like with that very same method, we can arrive at almost polar opposite belief. Do you think that way of knowing your belief is a reliable way to know that belief?
If you read indeed, there are passages and letters written by Queen Victoria herself where she, let's just say, gleefully comments upon the manhood of her husband Albert. That's why there's a ring named after him. That's how he used to control the beast.
Are you inside my brain?
I can tell you what Satan your mind into believing.
Hold on. I find it kind of offensive to use inflammatory language like that to describe somebody that does not believe in your God.
Whether it's in the Bible or not, for treating a human being as a means and not an end in themselves. And just because some Bronze Age semi-savages may have justified it, I just don't think that counts.
If you, yes you, can arrange to be in the Austin area on February 26th, consider joining us in the studio audience at the ACA Freethought Library for live broadcasts of Talk Heathen and the Atheist Experience. Doors will open at 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday and noon on Sunday. Parking is where you can find a legal spot after the lot is full. If you can't make it there this month, we will continue to broadcast live from the library the last week of each month. So keep an eye out, keep watching the shows and our website, atheist-community.org, for news and information as we expand our in-studio offerings in the near future. And speaking of being in the local Austin area, if you live in Austin or are Austin adjacent, we are in great need of additional crew members for the shows. If you are interested in assisting with video, audio, or call screening, and you can attend our live studio shows, please, please email us at tv@atheist-community.org, and the production team will be in touch. Can we get a peek at the production team? Can we get a crew cam? I know this is an odd time to spring that on the crew. You guys gotta, you know, Woo. Here we go. We love our crew. We love our crew and our crew cat, who's in charge of this whole production. Let's go chat.
Don't step on crew cat.
Never, yeah. Never. Let's chat with Zach, who is asking, what logical reason do atheists have against Islam? Zach, how are you today? Zach with us.
I don't see him on the queue.
I brought him up. Zach, I'm going to drop you out, Zach. And if you can call back, talk to the call screeners, we'll bring you back up to the front of the queue. John in Canada asking, what's your ultimate proof that God does not exist? John, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Is that what you wanted to talk about?
Yes. I just want to know. First, I'll ask the first question. What convinced you guys that God does not exist?
John, I feel like you've called and asked this several times, but I mean, maybe I'm confusing you with this, so hopefully not. And apologies if I do. So I don't provide if you're talking about proof, I take that to be like a deductive argument or something, or like, maybe some inductive evidence or something. I'm not making that claim. My position that where I take more of an I guess how some people will label a Gnostic side of atheism is based on the fact that I've come to the conclusion that I think naturalism is true. There isn't really any room for gods in the view that I have. And it's more of an abductive type of like Occam's razor style view. I just think that when we compare the data that me and the theist agree upon, it ends up turning out that naturalism makes less commitments. It doesn't have to commit itself to like foreign ontology or all stuff that's mystical and a divine realm and angels and jinns and genies. I can explain all the data without having to appeal to all that stuff. Similarly with the caller who came in with the transcendental stuff and wants to talk about mental states being, you know, normative or separate from the physical, I think that's extra baggage. I think a lot of these cases, when I talk to people, they add so much to their theory that I don't see what that stuff is doing to explain the data. It seems like you can just shave all that stuff off and you're left with naturalism. So that would be kind of my view on it. It's not a proof. It's not conclusive. It's just, in my opinion, the most humble way that I could come to the conclusion that I think it's more probable than a God existing. And that can change. Someone can change my opinion on that. That's the beautiful thing about it.
Yeah. And for me, I'll be super fast. I haven't heard anybody bring up a God and provide any evidence that such a thing would exist. The arguments that are presented always tend to have some problems. And people often will present ideas of gods that are like internally inconsistent or contradictory, right? So they those types of gods can't exist. A God that's perfectly just and perfectly merciful, for example. But generally, my position is that I'm not convinced gods exist, not that I'm convinced God doesn't exist. I'm one of those annoying atheists who does that.
So what evidence would you do if he doesn't, don't mind me asking?
So I would I would ask you to imagine a courthouse, okay? And when the prosecutor comes in and sees the jury, does the prosecutor go up to the jury and ask them what would convince them?
No, he doesn't.
No, what, the prosecutor just gives the evidence, right? Makes the case.
Yes.
Right. The jury coming in doesn't know, right, the facts of the case. The prosecutor is the one who would know the facts of the case, and the attorneys would hash it out, right? They would present their arguments. So it, for me, as a guy sitting in a jury box on this issue, it's baffling to me when people ask me this question.
Oh, okay. What if, you know, God himself is right in front of
you? How would I know it was God himself?
Let's say a man just magically appeared. There's no way you could possibly...
Like, the first thing we should do is check the water supply and see if someone slips some acid into our drinks, right? I mean, that would be one of the first things I would do.
Yeah, what, like, okay, why would I jump to the conclusion that it was a god and not, you know, something else?
Okay, let's say a man walks, not even walks around, let's say a man magically appears in the room and he makes it rain inside your, just inside your bedroom. That's something that no man could possibly do.
Okay. Again, like, how am I assessing the, so what you're describing is, an experience, easy for me to say. So if I have an experience, my question to you is, at what point would I be justified in concluding that the experience was supernatural in nature?
If you experience something that cannot be explained by science, wouldn't it be rational that could be supernatural, at least entertain the possibility?
Well, how? Okay, so help me out. At what point am I justified in concluding that something can't be explained by science, as opposed to that it hasn't been explained yet?
Okay, what if one day you're looking out your window?
Wait a minute. Answer that question for me. Help me out. So, because you're putting this on the table, and we've got to know, right? Because if there are people out there who are saying, here's something that happened, science can't explain it. How do we know what science can't explain versus what science just hasn't explained yet?
And this is a legitimate concern we have to consider if we're going to a pursuit of truth, right? And this is something we have to consider. Yeah, so what would be your answer?
Okay, science is something that you can test with instrument stuff, correct?
No, science is a method you use to learn things about reality. And I have to point out, just as a quick sidebar, that there have been a lot of things that we have thought about as a species and gone, science can't explain that. But there's a lot of things that are in that category that science has gone on to explain. And I have to point out that every single time science has ever found an explanation for anything ever, it has never been God, ever.
But what if it did one day?
What if?
Yes, that's the question I'm asking.
I mean, well, yeah.
Well, so then we would think God exists.
Yeah, then probably, that would, you know, that'd probably change.
Hopefully we wouldn't be biased towards the evidence. But the problem is that this isn't, like, it's not me or Kenneth's concern that nobody's offering this kind of, I apologize about what I'm about to say to people who have heard me give this analogy, but I'm going to use it because I think it draws the point. So bear with me if you've already heard me say this 1,000 times. Me and Kenneth are using a tool, right? We're building houses. Just imagine that tool is science. And we're building a bunch of houses. The houses are, they're looking great. We're starting to build neighborhoods, starting to get a really good infrastructure down, cities, really tall skyscrapers, right? This tool is getting us a lot. It's providing a lot of results, an amalgamation of results. And you come up to us and you say, hey, but there's this other stuff that we could do. There's another tool that we can use that's useful to detect this other stuff or to build this other great stuff. And me and Kenneth are like, okay, that's great. Yeah, maybe the hammer's not the only thing that we can use. What's the tool? But what's strange is that when we look at your lot, you're kicking rocks, right? You haven't even built a foundation. And not even that, you can't take us to Lowe's or Home Depot or any store and show us what aisle to buy the tool in, what the tool smells like or looks like, what it tastes like if I put it to my tongue, if it's metallic, right? I have nothing. I can't even conceive of the methodology. And then it always feels strange that people will stand on, you know, me and Kenneth's buildings and then shout out that, hey, like, why don't you, like, what would be evidence for you? I don't know. Why don't you build a building first? Because me and Kenneth have built entire neighborhoods and you have to stand on top of them to express your concerns. It feels kind of ironic. So I'm open to this other tool, but you have to take us to Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever and show us that we can actually purchase it. I just find that I never get there.
Okay, so are you telling me that there's absolutely nothing that could come? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I'm saying I take me to Lowe's.
Yeah, we evidence is all that it would take to change my mind.
If science can't do it, just give us another methodology, right?
Yeah. If there's no scientific evidence, what kind of evidence is there?
The point of that analogy is just that I'm open to other tools than science. You have to show that there is such a tool.
But I proposed one at the beginning. What if God literally stood right in front of you?
Yeah, the question still would be of, like, how could I know that it was God? When would I be justified in going, okay?
Well, and John, I have a clear answer to that. It's the same thing with David Hume, you know, if you wrote, you know, Jesus lives or whatever in the sky or something like that, you know, with all the stars. I mean, the first thing I would do is not say like, oh, I accept it, or there's being standing in front of me. I would be concerned of whether or not someone slips some acid in my drink, or I'd be more concerned about psychological facts. That would be the first thing I would do. Why? Because I have a set of background information that's every single time, like Kenneth said, when this happens, it does end up, when we can detect it, having some root psychologically, or something that just was a mistake, something pattern recognition, right? Any of these types of things that can explain it. I'm not justified in seeing it right away and going, oh, that's clearly God. I mean, that might be evidence, but I have to do some investigation. I can't just stop there and bow down to this thing. How do I know if it's not an alien with just wants to fuck with me, right? Just like, I'm bored. I have all this technology. Let's fuck with this guy who looks like Jesus and put Jesus in front of him. I mean, they both sound ridiculous to me.
All it takes, all you have to do is reflect for a moment and recognize that all of us have the capacity to be wrong and come to wrong conclusions about our experiences and be confused. And if that's the case, if people can be wrong about the nature of their experiences, if they can be confused, then we just, you know, we need a little something extra before we're justified in concluding that our, you know, conclusions are correct. You know, if somebody poofed out of thin air in front of me, knowing that I can be wrong about stuff, knowing that it's possible for people to see things that aren't there, knowing that there's a whole bunch of possible candidate explanations here, I am not justified yet without some extra evidence in concluding anything other than that I'm having an experience.
Okay, so are you two men familiar with Answers in Genesis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, those people are totally firmament that God exists. They're sure about that, and nothing possibly changed their minds. They're not open. I want to know,
right,
are you open to any and all possibilities?
Yeah, of course. We've established that.
Yeah, okay, but before I'll accept that something's a possibility, I need evidence for it.
Well, yeah, and if it turns out that you give us descriptions of God and their contradictory properties, then yeah, me and Kenneth can go, yeah, squared circles don't exist. This God that has contradictory properties probably doesn't exist, given, you know, that we like logic, you know.
Okay, well, that's all I wanted to know. Well, thank you for talking to me, gentlemen. Have a good night.
Yeah, have a good one. Take care.
Have a good one.
Hey, Zach's back. Let's get Zach. Awesome. Zach, how are you? You want to talk about what do atheists have against Islam? Is that correct?
Yes, how are you?
Hey.
Yo.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, what's up?
Okay, so I just want to start off first. Do you believe in a creator?
No.
A creator of what? Like, I'm holding a pen in my hand, and I'm pretty sure someone created this pen, but I don't think that's what you're talking about.
Greater than the pen. Do you believe someone created this world that we live in, that you walk in, that you, the air you breathe?
Of course not.
Okay, so with atheists, right, one thing I've noticed, mm-hmm, is they don't apply their standards to actual real life. So if your wife just told you she got pregnant without another man, mm-hmm, or the owner of your car, whoever built your car, just told you the pieces magically came together, you wouldn't believe that.
Right.
So why do you believe in something infinite?
Yeah, it's just so easy. This is so easy because, one, we have a background information on building assembly lines that build cars, right? We know they don't come together based on that. Now, under your view, you think God designed everything, right? Everything was designed by God, right?
Wait, really quick. Hang on, Mike. Before we go here, I just got to ask, what do you think atheism has to say about the formation of Earth?
They don't have an answer. It's just doubt. That's exactly what...
Wait. I'm asking you, hang on. I know you've got points that you're trying to make, but this is a separate question, and it's like, it's sincere.
It's bothering Kenneth.
Because I'm trying to figure out what you think atheism is. Okay. So theism is the belief in a God or gods. You put that little A at the beginning, it means without or not, right? So without theism, without belief in a God or gods, not belief in a God or gods is atheism. Okay. So if somebody doesn't believe in a God or gods, what do they think about the formation of planets?
They don't have a clear explanation. They just try to dodge around it because, see, when it comes to atheism, people say it's a lack of evidence, but really you don't want evidence because deep down you're too arrogant to worship God.
Let me try this again. Hang on. If I don't collect stamps, what does that tell you about my thoughts on how planets are formed?
Mm-mm-mm. See, this is what you guys do. I've noticed. And another thing before I get to the point, you guys talk to Christians a lot or you don't.
No, I'm going to put the mute button. We're not going to like dodge right? Because for one, Kenneth was asking you a question. I am going to continue with the thing that I wanted to go through. You're not going to gish gallop to like 6 points. We're not going to do that. So if you want to stay on the phone and stay on the show, just answer Kenneth. Don't do this whole, you're arrogant. Don't do this whole meta attack. It has nothing to do with the content. Focus on the content of what's being talked about. Don't focus about the meta attacks. Okay. It's so dumb. It's childish.
Can you re-ask the question?
Yeah.
Yeah. And focus on the content this time.
If somebody doesn't collect stamps, what does that tell you about their thoughts on how planets are formed?
If they don't collect stamps, what does that have to do with it? Okay. Well, what's your point though?
Answer the question. If somebody doesn't collect stamps, what does that tell you about what they think about how planets are formed?
If they don't collect stamps?
Yes.
There's no correlation. I don't.
Fucking nice. You nailed it. Well done. Bravo. Okay. So let's try this with the other thing. If somebody is not convinced that gods are a real thing, if someone doesn't believe in God, what does that tell you about what they think about how planets are formed?
It's a false analogy.
Do me a favor. Hang on. We'll deal with whether or not it's a false analogy later. Just answer the question first. What does the one thing tell you about the other thing?
If they don't believe planets exist or God exists, could you say that again?
If somebody is an atheist, all right, someone doesn't believe in God, what does that tell you about what they think about how planets are formed?
They don't have an answer. Or I guess what you want me to say is there's no correlation. Is that what?
Yes, well, there's no correlation.
The reason I want you to say that is just because it's true. That's the only reason.
I'm going to explain to you why there isn't, right? Because I have a neighbor.
Okay, go ahead.
He's an atheist. He takes the position gods do not exist. He's like a very firm Gnostic atheist, right? He thinks the earth is flat. He doesn't think that there are planets. There's no entailment from the fact that he believes in God that he has to think that there are planetary disks from which planets form from, which is my view, by the way, just going with science. So I do have a view and it has empirical data to support it, by the way. But that view that I take and the view that my neighbor takes has nothing to do with our atheism. They're separate propositions that we're talking about, that we're judging. So Kenneth's point stands, right? Even if someone takes a position that God doesn't exist, there's no correlation. If they take the position that I don't believe in God, there's no correlation in both cases.
And there are theist cosmologists who have the exact same ideas on how planets formed as the atheist cosmologists they work with. They just think that God was involved. Okay. But how the planet was formed is still a result of, you know, natural processes. There's gravity involved. There's chemistry involved. They just think that's guided by God.
Okay,
while the atheist
wouldn't.
Where do
those natural processes come from?
Yes, Zach.
We're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what I wanted to get into you with, because this is really important when you talk about the design. You came in saying, "Is there a caller?" Is there a creator? You're the caller. Is there a creator? And so I asked you a question, and it seemed like you answered yes. Under your view, everything is designed by God, right?
Of course.
Awesome. So in your view, when you did this whole builder analogy, things randomly coming together, in me and Kenneth's view, we think that there are natural objects that aren't designed, like rocks. And then we think that people can take rocks and design things with them, like sculptures or like buildings. So me and Kenneth can pick up, we can get there. Me and Kenneth can pick up that rock and say, this is a natural, undesigned item. And we can go point to a rock house and say, this is a designed item. Me and him have a comparative basis for what a designed object is versus a non-designed object. In your view, everything is designed. You can't even know what an undesigned thing looks like because God created fucking everything. You can never make a comparison under your worldview that something is designed or not. You're just begging the question and assuming everything is designed. You have no comparative basis, whereas me and Kenneth do. We do have background information. Now, if you just want to ask me, where did all this stuff come from? I can take the same move that the theist does.
Okay, I got
Hold on.
Go ahead.
If it's the case that you make a claim as a theist, me and Kenneth go, why did God have to exist? You say, well, he had to exist of metaphysical necessity. He's necessary, right? I could do the same move. Why is there something rather than nothing? Because there had to be an initial state of time, which, by the way, the first premise of the Quran would be false because there wouldn't be anything that caused the initial state of time because it's initial. If something caused it, it wouldn't be initial. It's the first moment. So, I mean, you're acting as if this like theism escapes these problems when all it does is add a bunch more baggage. You don't have have to make these moves. This is why I said naturalism is preferred earlier in the show. You don't have to make these moves. They're doing nothing to explain the data, and you don't even have a relevant comparison between a non-designed item or a designed item. So your argument just failed. You can go ahead.
Okay. Are you done?
Done.
Okay. So basically, I think the point you're trying to get to is if you don't see something directly happen, you can't just take a leap of faith, or you can't just jump to the conclusion that it's God. Is that like what you're saying? What you're trying to...
I'm just saying you don't have a compare... You talk about design things. Oh, how did this stuff get here?
So you must... But you don't have
the luxury of looking at undesigned objects like me and Kenneth do, right? You don't have a comparative analysis at all.
Object? What do you mean? What is
a rock.
A rock is an undesigned object.
Yeah.
We know you think so under your worldview, but
you have
no undesigned objects
to compare to.
I think the point Mike made didn't quite land with you. I want to, because okay, we don't have a ton of time. Well, let me just, so you just asked about faith. Okay. So I just want to address what you said. Okay. Because it goes somewhere that I think is really important. You talked about taking a leap of faith and whether that's something that either of us are willing to do. And so I just want to quickly ask you, when you use the word faith, what do you mean?
Okay. But it's not even a leap of faith. I don't want to say leap of faith because it's logical as well. But just because you didn't see the creation happen live, can you not believe it? Is that basically what your point is?
I don't think that's either of our point. But I'm just really quickly, can we just drill down? Let me give you an example. So if I'm upstairs in my house, right? And so I have a 3-month-old baby in my home. We're not roommates. She's my daughter. If I go into my bathroom and I see a dirty diaper on the floor and I wasn't there to see what happened, I'm going to jump to a conclusion. I'm going to assume that my wife was in there and changed my baby's diaper and she had other stuff to do and took off and forgot to grab the diaper on her way out, right? I don't have to be physically present for something to happen for me to form a belief state about, you know, ideas about what's most likely to have occurred.
Okay, so why don't you do the same when it comes to God? It's because you're too arrogant deep down to worship him. So you have to
stop with the meta. You look so weak when you do this meta shit.
If you're going to ask the question, just ask the question, okay? Yes, imagine for a second, and I'm not doing this.
Quickly, let me finish, and you
no,
can
no,
say
Zach, you need to focus on the... Zach, you need to focus... No, you don't get the luxury or the privilege to be like, no, let me talk, because you're just... All you're doing is making a meta. You're too arrogant for this or that. That's not addressing the content. That's just you making a really pathetic move to try to get out of focusing on the content.
Come out and say it. No, you're not going to come out and say yes. Okay, God exists. I don't want to worship. You have to use mental gymnastics.
Let me tell you why I won't say that. And I think it's probably the same reason for Mike and for every other host that you'll see here, is because it's not true. Is why we won't say it.
I've heard multiple of the hosts say that live. Even if God exists, we wouldn't worship. I've many, many, many times. So you can't say
that. There's a difference. There's a difference between even if God exists and we don't believe God exists because we don't want to worship. Okay. You're all over the map right now, man. So when you ask,
really,
why wouldn't I,
same thing.
When you ask, it's not. When you ask, why wouldn't I take the leap of faith? Okay. With respect to the one thing and not the other. Okay. Like I know that my baby exists. I know that my wife exists. I know that dirty diapers are a thing that happen in my house right now. Okay. There's a lot of stuff that is there where there's all of this legwork that's been done, like to give me some solid epistemological grounding for thinking, hey, my wife probably changed the diaper in here and just left it on the floor. Okay. So I've already got most of the work done. I don't have to make a bunch of unnecessary assumptions that aren't supported by any evidence to come to my conclusion there. All right. I've got by definition, one belief is rational and another isn't. Okay. And it comes down to evidence. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Doing this whole,
maybe the baby could have used the diaper herself, right? Why don't you accept that?
Right. Because of the lack of evidence.
There's
right?
no background information on such an event.
So when I'm trying to use my brain to figure out what is most likely true, because that's what I care about. What's true? Okay. And I'm going, what's more likely going to be the case, that my wife changed a diaper in here or that the 3-month-old did this herself?
Okay. So
are you serious?
The earth created itself or it was created?
Literally,
we know how the earth was. By the way, we have good evidence on how the earth was formed. Do you know what a planetary disk is, like, or protoplanetary disk? Right. You need to, like, you think that there aren't answers to this, but if you actually looked at Big Bang cosmology, looked at what epochs are, and then look how suns form, and look how planets form, you can actually
what happens, not how it happens.
Yeah. Okay. Listen. It's fine. The point is, right? You've come on here and have given nothing, not one single shred of evidence that we should accept that there's a creator. Do you have a not like a prediction, like a novel prediction, something that like science does where they have predictive expectations and then it occurs once, oh, hey, if God exists, we should expect this thing. Do you have any of that? Or are you just assuming that and then mad at us for not accepting the fact that you haven't provided any evidence? You've literally said a car was assembled, therefore fucking God. That's literally your argument. That's what you've called in for. Oh, cars are built. That must mean the world was created. And you don't think that's a stupid argument.
Okay, you've never
seen stupid. It's like a 5-year-old would comes up with that argument. A 5-year-old. Oh, I saw an ice cream guy made my ice cream. Must mean that life was created. It's like the ice cream maker.
Yes, because a 5-year-old has a natural inclination that he doesn't need logical, crazy scientific proofs because it's
oh yeah. So we should just oh great. So you think hold on. You think that there's one thing, right? You look at things that are designed. You think you can logically extrapolate the fact that therefore everything was designed. When you don't realize that doesn't logically follow in the slightest, right? There's still the option that no, because we're just asking we're just asking the question. If we really want to boil it down, why is there something rather than nothing? Now you have an option. There's something rather than nothing because there had to be. What was that had to be? God, right? He could have not existed. I can do the same thing. Why is there something rather than nothing? There's an initial state of reality, the singularity, whatever, first moment of time, first moment of natural reality. And you go, why does it exist? It had to exist. I can make the same move that you do. And if you're just going to say, oh, no, there has to be a creator, you're just engaged in sophistry. You're just engaged with begging the question. You're not interested in actually getting to the truth. You're interested at coming from a top-down perspective that God exists, and then I'm going to look down and try to fit all the pieces together after the fact. That's why that move is dumb. You have to present an actual argument or give evidence, not just assert it.
Okay, atheists try to make science an entity. Science can't create. So
yeah, I'm going to mute you until you give evidence or we're going to move on.
Well, Zach, I know you don't see it right now. I hope you go back and watch the call because what Mike is trying to, what we're trying to encourage you to do is just slow down and be honest. All right. So right now you're not talking to all atheists. You're talking to two guys who are atheists, who don't agree on everything, who have our own perspectives, right? When you say something like atheists make an entity of science, it's wrong out of the gate, man.
And by the way, here's how dumb this argument is. Snowflakes form spontaneously. That must mean the universe spontaneously formed. It's the same logic. If I said, oh, I see a snowflake.
You're jumping.
No, yes, it's a jump. Exactly. Both cases are non sequiturs.
No,
both cases are non sequiturs. Yes. And I'm going to explain to you why. I'm going to explain to you why. If I make an observation and I say this thing spontaneously formed, that thing spontaneously formed, it wasn't designed, it was spontaneous. Therefore, the universe must be spontaneously came into existence. I would be committing the same fallacious reasoning that you are with this call. There's nothing different. That's why me and Kenneth wouldn't make a dumb argument for atheism. We wouldn't call the theist experience or the Christian experience to go, hey, have you seen snowflakes? They spontaneously formed. That must mean that the universe spontaneously formed. They'd laugh at us. Your argument is no different. Go back to the drawing board, get a new argument. This one sucks.
Okay, before you let me go quickly, can I ask, have you guys looked into Islam at all?
Yeah.
Yes.
And why is it not logical to you? Or why do you deny it? Can you give me some logical reasons since you love logic?
Well, I mean, we'd have to go through it. Well, I don't take a firm, it's not like Christianity with me where I'm very confident that Jesus was a failed apocalypticist and that's really detrimental. I don't have that type of critical analysis on Islam like I do for Christianity, but that's not saying that there isn't any. It's that I've spent more time on what stuff is culturally relevant. Now, the reason why I don't accept the Quran or Islam is I'm just not convinced that it's true. I don't think that there's like something that shows that it's false necessarily. I mean, we just have to have that conversation. Now, if you made a claim like a lot of Muslims do that there's no errors in the Quran, I think that form of Islam is clearly false, right? Because there's several things like embryology or talking about how Jesus's like body was swapped or that he wasn't actually crucified or whatever. Like all that type of stuff to me is clearly false, right?
But I thought you don't you like not believe in these claims? So how do you know Jesus was or wasn't?
I accept that Jesus existed. There. I think the scholarly evidence I'll get some slack for this probably. But yeah, I'm not a mythicist. I accept like two
want to myth this either,
about Jesus,
but I gotta
he was probably
say
probably baptized, he probably was crucified, and he existed. That's the
were
that
you there, can you prove it didn't happen, so you, is an extremely weak
you
position,
believe that right? Without seeing it, but you don't believe this earth
it's
has a
based,
creator.
It's no, no, it's based on a critical man. Analysis on history, dude. This isn't just like wit, so you if I could look, if Jesus didn't exist, that'd be great. My argument would be easier, right?
Wait, Zach, let me hear. So what is like make your argument. Okay. Let's go ahead.
So the point is, I don't just argue to argue. I'm not just going to sit here and argue. It's okay. You can drop me if you want. But honestly, you guys should be intellectually honest and not just argue God. To argue. Like,
let
are
me,
you seriously?
Let me,
what is, what
Zach,
is this?
Zach, let me tell you, want, let me tell you something real fast, Zach. Just real quick.
The ad hominems.
So, hang on. Zach, so let me tell you something about me. So I was in the Army from 2007 to 2011. And while I was in the Army, I heard people say a lot of things about Islam and a lot of things about Muslims. So when I went to college after getting out of the Army, I saw that there was classes that were being offered a two-semester survey of the Quran, right? And I was like, I'm going to take that because I guarantee all the stuff that I've heard from my friends about Islam is fucking wrong and I'm going to find out. So I went and took the class. I took these two semesters. I was the only non-Muslim in the class. I read the Quran from cover to cover in English, right? I know that that's going to count as points against me because I don't read Arabic, but I checked it out. What more do you want me to do?
Oh, sorry. I got a little trigger happy on the mute today. Oh, he was going on that whole time.
You just don't want to believe.
Zach, did you hear what I just said? Did you hear what I just said about what I did?
Yes, I heard. You did read it and you weren't convinced. But were you not convinced because the evidence wasn't convincing, or you just don't want to believe?
I didn't. I was not. I wasn't given any evidence that would support the claim that Islam is true.
I would respect atheists more if they just said straight up, like, okay,
Zach, what did I just tell you?
I don't want to worship him.
Zach, what did I just tell
you? What is
Hang on,
this
hang on, Mike.
Shit.
Let me take him down this road. Zach,
you want
what
people
did,
to,
what did
to
I,
be an atheist Zach, and say, "Oh, God did"?
Zach, what did I tell you?
Down, if you didn't believe, why do you have a call show where you spend hours and hours of your day?
Yeah,
because it's relevant. Because people make legislation based on these bullshit beliefs, and I have to be surrounded with people that hold to this shit, and it affects people, affects women's rights, affects trans rights, affects my gay friends. What the fuck are you talking about? I'm passionate about this because your religion and other people's religion affects other people's lives. Do you know how many people have had to deconstruct their views, who've had to change their lives, who no longer have family members that talk to them anymore? They don't have friends that talk to them anymore. And you want to have the audacity to turn to us and say, what are we doing with our life, as if this doesn't benefit people? You can fuck yourself.
Zach, you're accusing the wrong people of this intellectual dishonesty that you're talking about. Okay. So when I read the Quran, when I took those classes, and in the decade almost since then, I have not seen anything that would qualify as evidence to support the claim that Islam is true. Do you have something that would fit that description? Because what I'm concerned about is what's true. I want to believe anything if it's true.
Before we jump around,
I'm done talking to this guy. For the record, I'm bowed out.
I'm going to get to your claim. Before you get to other religions, you have to cross out any religion that doesn't believe in one God, because this creation is too perfect to have two gods, three gods.
Why?
Idol worship. So that crosses out Buddhism, Hinduism, basically every ism except Judaism.
Why?
And Islam.
How do you know there wasn't a committee of gods who designed everything? What are you talking about?
Because it's too perfect for there to be multiple gods.
What
it's
are you talking about?
The earth, if you've even just studied the human eye or the body, you can tell this was designed by a creator. Whether you want to accept it or not is another debate. But
my wife is nearsighted, who has to wear glasses because her freaking eyes don't work. That kind of perfection. Or the perfection of my dad had Alzheimer's and died from that, you know, this disease that ravaged his brain, that kind of perfection. The cancer that people in my family have had, that kind of perfection. What are you talking about?
Okay, well, yes, that's another debate. We believe this life is a test. It's not the life of paradise. Mm. That's another topic.
So it's not perfection,
that
really.
That doesn't deny. Right? Sorry for your family. But that doesn't deny that there was a creator.
But it's not perfect, right? Our bodies.
You feel disappointed. The fact that
it's not perfect
that life didn't go.
It's Zach. I wish you could see the intellectual dishonesty on display on your end of this call. Okay. I was saying I care about what's true. Okay, if there's any truth to Islam, I will convert. But you start talking about everything so perfect, we know there must have been one God. That's, you just pulled that right out of your ass, dude. That's not, there's no evidence to support that claim.
He's making like weird claims too. Like, I wish atheists would be honest and just say like deep down they believe in God. So you want us to lie? Well, like, what is that? This is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
I wish the atheists would be honest. Now here's me being dishonest. It's incredible.
Yeah, this is Zach, I talked to like so many theists. This is the most insane call I've ever taken. I talk to people on TikTok, on whatever apps, Stereo, whatever it might be, Discord. What, this is the most ludicrous. You've made no sense the entire time in your confidence. Like, I don't know if you know what the Dunning-Kruger effect is, but like, you are at the top peak where you have your confidence is so high, and Zach, but your ability to actually understand what's even going on, it's vacant. It's absent.
I wish you could understand. Like, I was a Christian for more than 20 years. And when I was studying the Bible and starting to question stuff and starting to realize that there were things that didn't make sense, I desperately wanted it to be true. I thought I had a relationship with Jesus. I wanted it to be true. But when I realized I didn't have good reasons for believing it, I had to let it go, man. And that experience is so common. There are people watching this right now who are, I guarantee, just like screaming at their computers because you're accusing them of being intellectually dishonest. Oh, they don't believe because they're just arrogant. You have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
It's incredibly offensive because I can just tell you, you're not actually a Muslim. You don't actually believe this stuff. You don't think Muhammad, you don't think that the moon was split. You don't think any of this stuff. I mean, imagine I did this. Imagine I just said, look, Zach, you're not a sincere believer. I know that you don't believe this Aisha stuff and marrying a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old. You surely don't believe that stuff. Like, you have to think that's wrong. What if I did that to you? Right? That's dishonest. If we're in the pursuit of truth together, if we're in the pursuit of truth together, Zach, right? Because that's the, if we're going to find any little nugget of where we agree with the other person on the other side of the call, it's that hopefully we're in the pursuit of truth together. Hopefully that's what we're doing. Okay. Oh. And you don't sound like you're on board with that. You sound like all you care about is like, I don't know, like dunking on an atheist when you haven't even jumped off the ground. Like, you fell. Like, horrendously. You dropped the ball. The other team scored.
Okay, before you let me go, just one final thing. Why do you not apply your logic to when it comes to this topic? You know, like, again, I don't want to go back to the same thing, but let's say, for example, the kid example, like, if your baby was in the bathroom. If your baby was in the bathroom, why can't it be a 50-50 probability that he just changed his own diaper? Because that's what you apply to God.
How would
you apply that logic that, oh, it could have just created itself? So why don't you give
no.
it? Why don't you consider?
So two quick things.
It looks like
one,
you're trying to disprove God. You're arguing to disprove God. Coming in unbiased.
Two quick things. One, you keep using the word created, okay? And by using the word created, you smuggle in the idea of a creator. I don't think anything ever created itself, okay? That's not how creation works. All right. I think something's formed through natural processes, but that's different. You should. So being precise with our language is important, is all I'm trying to point out.
Natural process needs a creator.
I'm going to answer you. I know. And we got to wrap up. I'm out of time. But
by the way, it's a claim. Yes, it is a claim. You haven't put any meat on the bones. You've just been like, oh, it requires it. It requires it. That's fine. Like, my, it is a claim.
It is a claim.
That you keep okay? down, you know, but
and,
you have to try.
Okay. You have access to my mental states. Zach, you have access to my mental states.
Things,
the first
things,
time we've
fast.
Ever talked, you know what I'm thinking.
So
you're
first,
that much of an arrogant piece of shit. Really?
I don't know how the hell we would assign like a probability assessment to whether or not my 3-month-old changed her own diaper. Okay. Like, I don't know how we would even input the data to assess the probability of that versus other candidate explanations. All right. But, and we're going to end on this note. I just want to tell you, because like, I'm going to flip what you're doing back at you and just see what your response is. You know that Islam is bullshit. You know, it's not true.
No, I don't. Don't ever.
No, you do though. You do though. And you won't admit it because you're arrogant, but you know, deep down, you know, it's all bullshit. It didn't happen.
It's cool, Kenneth. Okay, he knows exactly what we're thinking. So like,
I just
want to
hear his response.
We can just have a conversation.
I want
to
hear the response
about what we're going to say.
He knows that Islam isn't true. He knows that the prophet and a bunch of people made it all up. It's nonsense. So what's the response to that, Zach?
There's many, many proofs to prove Islam being true. I mean,
you don't actually
believe but you know that that's not true. You're just lying to because of your arrogance.
Yeah. So Islam is not like Christianity. It's
no. But you said that. But you really don't mean it, though, Zach. You actually mean the opposite.
Right.
conclusion to establish that Prophet Muhammad's a true prophet.
Yeah, but after that, but you don't actually believe that, though, Zach.
Right? Why are you doing that? You're just arrogant. Why are you talking about this? You're just
Yeah. What are you doing? You don't actually believe that.
See, now you're just arguing.
Deep down, no. It's called a reductio.
Yeah.
Google reductio ad absurdum. Google it.
Right? And on that note, dropping the call. Zach, go back and watch it. Because we're out of time. Apologies to the there were some atheists who waited a long time to try to get on, and we couldn't get to you because we give theists priority. We will get to you guys next time. Hey, listen, thank you so much for being here today, everybody.
Visit our website, today, Kenneth.
We got spicy.
They got me spicy today.
My hope, I'm not trying to just be a dick to that guy. It's not just returning fire. I'm genuinely hoping that he recognizes how having someone tell you what you believe is just the most ridiculous thing. As those words detonated in your head and you're like, this guy, he doesn't know what I believe. Why would he make these assumptions about me and say things? Exactly. Learn something. Okay. I got to tell everybody, visit our website, atheist-community.org for the latest on what's been happening here. Feel free to contact us at tv@atheist-community.org. Mike, I could sit here all day with you and do this, but I got to go,
do baby stuff. Yeah.
You know it.
Did you just say, did we say that same time?
Best ever.
You owe me a spot on live on the TikTok.
Always. Yes. Come visit us on TikTok, everybody. We will see you guys next time. Take care.
What will it take for you to start opening your eyes, to stop questioning the bullshit everyone around you buys? You think it's any of your business?
Have you ever wanted to be a host on an ACA show or be the one calling the shots behind the scenes? Are you in Austin, Texas, or at least Austin adjacent? Well, on Saturday, February 25th, make your way down to the Free Thought Library because we'll be holding open auditions for show hosts and orientations for prospective crew members. For those wanting to be hosts, you'll be able to sit in the studio where our shows are broadcast, and we'll put you through your paces to see if you can be one of the new personalities of the ACA. For future crew members, you'll get hands-on experience using the equipment used for broadcast and will help us record the host auditions. If you've ever dreamed of being part of the ACA Productions, then this is your chance to show us what you've got. This event is free. For more information and registration, visit tiny.cc/ACA auditions.